Good afternoon, everybody. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and today is July 9th, 2013. I cannot believe it's already July 9th. I have a very interesting guest with me today, Joanne Richards. And Joanne is an executive director of an educational nonprofit organization known as Earth Defense Headquarters. Now, you might know about her. Her husband, Mark Richards, and his father, Ellis Lloyd Richards, were highly involved with top-level military intelligence operations all the way back since World War II. Many of these operations included on- and off-world contact and battles with various alien species. Now, Mark's background and history includes some really interesting bloodlines and personal connections. And as a consequence, even his grandfather worked with Nikola Tesla, which is incredible. So Joanne and I had met back in 2009 at the Sedona Skywatch. That was a most interesting experience. And then we met again in the Alchemy Conference in 2012. So I really thought she would have some very interesting insights into what's going on in the world from a historical standpoint, not so much current events, but historically what's going on, what treaties apply today, what is the ancient history behind these things. So welcome, Joanne. Thank you for coming on my show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it. So, well, I think the first question would be is, why do you think that we are still fighting in Afghanistan?
Because there are nasty, non-human entities there. And you know, we might as well start it off with a bang. they basically, I mean, there probably were some that have always been there, but a lot of them come through dimensional gates that are throughout Central Asia and the Middle East in the mountains there. And there's been stories for years, you know, back to ancient history of monsters and of like fiery caves. Yeah. There's a huge dimensional gate in Iran, and it's called the Kur Gate, K-U-R. Happens to be the pass or the actual gate that Alexander the Great was looking for. He wasn't just looking for a pass. And he probably found it, and it's a very stable one. But even like when the Afghanistan thing started happening, and then when the Iraq, there are people, villagers coming out of the mountains talking about monsters and whole villages of people disappearing and helicopters and fighter jets going to areas where publicly there's no fighting going. That was happening in Iran.
Wow.
So there are definitely some nasty ETs coming through, especially smaller gates. So fortunately not necessarily big enough to allow ships to come through, and they work with the terrorists there. So it's still going on, and so we keep having to come up with reasons to not bring everybody home.
Mm. And so would this apply to the entire Mideast area? I mean, are there some pretty negative ET factions dominating that region of the world?
I know it's Afghanistan and probably, well, definitely Iraq and the northern mountains, well, the mountains of Iran, and trying to think what else. I think, and I would skip over, like, I think, you know, even perhaps when there was stuff going on in Libya, I think.
Yes.
Is that where we're doing some bombing? I think there was stuff going on there, too. But definitely, and probably Pakistan, too, because the mountains kind of, you know, bleed down into northern Pakistan. So that whole area, some of the gates are always there. Some of them come and go. But there's definitely several gates there and several nasty things that come through and are wreaking havoc.
So
fact,
who?
You know, Mark has loved ones from Afghanistan who have had to leave the area because it's not safe for them.
Oh, wow. So, who is dominating these stargates?
I don't know. He has never told me the what kind of species, so that's a good question. And I know it's not – well, I don't know if it's – like, for example, we have a species of reptilian called reptoids that work with New World Order, but I don't think it's them. I think it's just a different species of, you know, something that's not friendly, and they're working more like with the Taliban and the terrorists over there. So he's never really told me which nasty species it is.
And you know, Joanne, I should clarify for the audience, Mark is unfortunately incarcerated. And
he is.
Yes.
Almost 31 years.
31
now.
Years. And he was framed,
yep.
And Joanne has been a very dedicated mouthpiece for getting his information out, even though he is behind bars. And so we want to commend her for the amount of information that she still to this day is compiling. In fact, she just got done talking to me about putting together a glossary of all the different types of alien species. Joanne, can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, he's got a really long intro, and actually, and it's Mark that does the writing. I just do the speaking.
Well, that's a good contract.
Yeah, I am the spokesperson. I've done a lot of research for him, but he actually puts together all the reports because he's the one that's had the experience. So, but the glossary has a really long intro about history and space and how things got started, and you know, how there might be life out there in different forms and whatever. And then it starts with a glossary of like, okay, like oceanics and reptilians, and probably there's probably an insect section. So I haven't really gone through all of it yet, but I know a lot of it's very relevant to, you know, what I'm going to be speaking about. Because in my talks, I already talk about lots of different kinds of species, and there's probably more that he's got in there that I haven't even read about yet, because there are hundreds and hundreds of species out
yes,
there.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And so now, are there different categories? You know, like you've got reptoid and...
There are different kinds of reptilians, some that originated on Earth and some originated in space. For example, in space, you have the Dracos, which are pretty well known, and those are like unfriendly, and I think they have wings and they're pretty tall. And I'll start with the raptors. On Earth, there were a couple of reptilian species that originated here, and one is a descendant of like velociraptor type dinosaurs.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Oh my
God.
They're pretty
nasty looking, but they're very cool. They're very cool species. And
wow.
And basically, you know, they were all over the place. I know, you know, they've just been all over the world, I'm sure. But the ones I talk about the most, their particular family line, their family line, like, lived in England in the British Isles, so that's pretty cool. But they descended from, and we just call them raptors, but 65 million years ago? No? Well, at some point, before the big meteorite hit Earth, you know, a lot of them had left Earth to go colonize space.
Right.
And so they left, and they're out there doing their thing. And several of them had bases on the moon and Mars, and they went out and they terraformed different planets and made them habitable for themselves. And then 65 million years ago, an asteroid hit, I think the Yucatan Peninsula, destroyed most of them that were on Earth. Some of them probably went underground. The ones that were on the moon and Mars evolved into more humanoid types that we now call reptoids. Mm. And even though they're basically kind of related way, way, way back when, you know, they're not friendly with each other. They don't like each other. The raptors still look very much like dinosaurs. Long, long tails, very strong chests, long, pointy snout with very sharp teeth, very
wow.
strong legs. They're built for running, and their forearms are shorter, but they have really sharp claws on all their feet and hands. But you know.
Now, have you actually seen them? I know you said Mark has had. He's actually worked with them when he was...
He has. No, I've never seen them, but I've seen drawings of them that either he's done and a friend of his has done. And, yes, his dad met one in 1952, Prince Naga, that came here as an ambassador. They became friends. They worked together, you know, with the military. Because there's a faction of them that thinks the humans are worth working with, and not just, you know, invading and eating and making slaves.
Well,
there
isn't that nice?
Other factions, pardon me?
I said, isn't that nice?
It is nice. There are other factions of them who don't agree with that and have tried to invade Earth, you know, a few times. But Mark met Prince Naga and a couple of his children when he was just almost, he was almost eight. He had been at a conference with his dad in England. So he's been around, and he's been around alien things since he was a little kid. But he, you know, he's played with them, then he's grown up to work with them in the military, and he's been friends with them for years. I mean, he was like best friends with Naga's son, and
wow.
They did lots of missions together, and poor Craig was murdered or, you know, died in combat in the late 70s.
Wow.
But, you know, until Mark was arrested, I'm sure he was still working and friendly with Naga. So, and there was a point where Naga had to leave Earth, but he's back.
Interesting. So, are they shapeshifters? I mean, how did he know that it was a, you know, some sort of Naga dinosaur type being?
Because, no, they don't shapeshift. Some reptilians, especially like probably the Reptoids, well, the Reptoids look more humanoid because they don't have a tail. They walk upright. And their look is more human looking than, because they don't have a big long snout. Some species, and so I'll just generalize, but some species can project a holographic image. I think it's probably really difficult for most species to change their atomic structure and actually shapeshift. I'm not saying they don't, because some probably do, but a lot of them can just project an image or maybe do body art so they look human, you know, kind of like the TV show V.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting you're saying that.
The raptors really don't do that. And they try, unless they're working with you for a reason, they try not to be seen by humans because, number one, you know, we're going to be scared, and number two, you probably shouldn't be seeing them, so then they probably have to eat you. And,
oh, my God.
And they've really grown to try not to eat humans unless absolutely necessary.
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, can you imagine somebody that's not affiliated with this field and what they would think if they heard this interview?
I know. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, I love sharing some of my funny things, and I didn't get to do this at the alchemy thing. It's like, you know, the I don't want to say the human side, but the personal side is the raptors, especially the ones Mark knows, they love orange crush soda. They love ice cream. You know, they discipline their children by, you know, grabbing their tail and throwing them against a wall or out the window, and hopefully they'll bounce. You know, and they've got a very spiritual side, and he's sent me some really wonderful quotes about their philosophies, and, you know, they honor Mother Earth better than most humans because this is their mother world, and they just treasure Earth so much.
Wow. Well, that's not too difficult to do, is it,
no,
Joanne?
No, I know. Yeah, it saddens them that we have trashed Earth so badly.
Yeah, definitely. Well, do you agree with the fact that, I mean, some reports out there are actually estimating over 50% of the beings walking this planet are like the soulless beings. They're actually projecting an image. They're not a true human per se.
Oh, I don't have any information on that, so I shouldn't comment.
So other than the Nagas, what were some of the other species that your husband interacted with?
Well, the Reptoids, they're pretty nasty, and they are nasty, and they work with the New World Order, so that's another type of reptilian. He has worked with a couple of cat species. He met one cat species out in space in 1979 while he was on a mission, and some of them came back to Earth with him, but they are about 9 feet tall. And they have wings, and they can fly, and they communicate telepathically, but they also do a humming kind of language, and they can do a sort of a Spock-type mind meld thing if they really need to get some information. But they're very friendly, and Mark had a first contact with them in August of 1979 and then did his mission and, you know, brought some back with him. But they also, you know, they're really, I don't know a lot about them, but they've got whiskers and they've got an interesting mouth. so, you know, very sensitive, and they sing. I probably said that. And they also like to dye their fur. So, you know, all these species have a sense of humor.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now you.
So that's one kind.
So you had mentioned that Mark's family had a great deal of interest and involvement with Nikola Tesla. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Both of his grandpas, both of his grandfathers worked on different projects with Tesla. And I know his one grandpa, one of Tesla's engine designs was used in an airship in the late 1800s that, like, on its test flights left the San Francisco Bay Area and went across the country. And his grandpa, I mean, I don't know exactly what kind of work he was doing with Tesla, but he was on the test flight. So I know there was probably more involvement than that because his grandpa was one of Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty cool. And he was like one of the original MIB secret, you know, service guys. So the other grandpa, Grandpa Richards, he was a brilliant electronics engineer. So he worked on several think tanks. He was on the Manhattan Project. He worked with Tesla on different projects. And then Mark's dad would spend some of his summers with Tesla testing a lot of his inventions for him, including like the death ray thing. And so they knew him pretty well.
So now the death ray, isn't that something that they use a lot today to take people out?
I'm not sure. Mark, you know, he's talked about like the Philadelphia experiment. And he's talked about right before Tesla died, and he called Mark's grandpa and Mark's dad to the hotel and said, you know, I know they're going to kill me pretty soon. And they thought he was just being wacko again. And he said, no, they're going to kill me pretty soon, and you need to take these, you know, my notes and stuff. So he gave them a huge portion of, like, what the notebooks and notes that people assumed were lost that the government didn't find when they, you know,
confiscated
and took his stuff.
Right.
So there's a lot of stuff that did get taken and hidden, but I don't know, you know, what's in the notes. So I don't know what's happened with a lot of the technology, but, you know, nothing surprises me.
So what do you feel the Manhattan Project has done as far as affecting us, you know, affecting the planet? Where do you think that's taken us?
The atomic bomb.
Well, true.
I know that the aliens are not happy that we have, they don't like, you know, obviously they don't like the nuclear stuff. They don't want us using nuclear weapons out in space. But at the same time, a spaceship that was designed in the late 50s, it was actually, one of the reasons we had so many nuclear bombs sitting around was because this particular spaceship was launched and then propelled in space using nuclear bombs.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that's, those are called the Orion spaceships. And the public story is that, what's his name? Theodore Taylor and Dyson, I forget his first name, I'm so sorry. They designed these in the late 50s, and Taylor is a great uncle of Mark's. I think he was like a cousin of Mark's mom. And they designed it, they were both scientists. But publicly, the story is that the project was, you know, they tested it, but the project was basically canceled because the government was going to do the Apollo program. Well, the Apollo program was actually a front for the Orion spaceships, because at least 9 of them were built, and by different, a couple by the U.S. and several by different countries and different big corporations, and, you know, were out in space since the 50s, and some of them, you know, I don't know what's happened to them now, but Mark's captained one of them, and his dad has been like commander of the fleet for, you know, when he was alive, so. You can read about that project, but publicly the story is that it was canceled, but it never was.
Interesting.
There's a little tangent.
So now, what is the purpose for calling it Orion? What is the significance behind that?
That's a good question. I don't know.
So
I have to, you know, there's so many factoids in my head with all the stuff he shared with me for almost 20 years now that I would have to go. If he's probably told me, I would just have to go look in my notes. But if you want to know, then I would look it up for you, but not at the drop of a hat.
Now, speaking of her looking up notes,
right.
Joanne also oversees the Dragon Hill Research Center, which is located at the family property up in San Anselmo, California. Can you tell us a little bit about that? It says here for a growing research facility, anybody who wants to come up and look into extensive collections on Wicca, mythical creatures, dragons, fairies, history, space, you name it, they can contact you.
They can. Years ago when I met Mark, I mean, he's always been a researcher and historian, so he's always collected newspaper and magazine articles about numerous topics. And then when I met him, he had already started writing this big family history that I started helping him with research for, not knowing what I was getting myself into, because it's turned into all these reports, all these extra, really extensive reports that now I share, especially about the UFO stuff and that kind of field, because that's what people are really interested in. But I have lots of information on numerous topics. But I also, like you said, the nonprofit, I guess the some of the main areas of focus would be the UFO alien area. We do love, well, dragons, but we love mythical creatures. So, but a lot about the elementals, the fairy world, and with the witchcraft. So, and also because as I've learned more about what Mark's doing, those are all kind of tied together. So
now, where does he get his research?
He either has it in his head because he's been involved with it, or like background details and biographies and dates. I help him, his kids help him, other friends help him. But as far as maybe what happened, if he wasn't personally there, he's either read the military log, or if it was like a Raptor thing, you know, they record, like, you know, in Star Trek, you know, they have the computer's recording everything everywhere. So they have like electronic or digital, I don't know what you call it from years ago, but, you know, they have recordings of their transcripts of what might have happened on their ships and things. So he's either been there, done that, or he's read the log, or somebody involved with it has had him read, you know, told him about it, or he's read the report. And because, like, his dad, if Mark wasn't there, but his dad was involved, his dad wouldn't tell him stuff, but other people would, or he would read their report. So it's not like he's just guessing or making it up. And a lot of stuff, one of his former partners kept really good diaries, even from the time they were kids. So some of the information from things they experienced as children, you know, he now has access to. So it almost
sounds like he has a photographic memory.
He does.
Okay.
He does, and he's probably above genius level anyway. He's really, I mean, that's really what attracted me in the first place, because I didn't know, the first time I met him, we didn't talk about UFOs. That, you know, that took a few years, actually. But he's really smart, and I really wanted that, and
yeah.
He's very interesting, and he's charming, and, you know, he's just had a life in the 29 years, he's packed, you know, like 10 lifetimes worth of stuff and activities that, you know, take a lot, you know, several people to take several lifetimes to do.
Is there any hope for him to be free?
Technically, the state says no, but I just won't accept that. So
good.
We're still hoping for miracles, and we're still hoping that there's a lawyer out there who's willing to help us and come up with a way to get him released, or even help us fight to get the older guys released. That, you know, the state is so burdened with the overcrowding at the prisons that, you know, the governor wants you to think they're releasing people, but really they're not going to, or they're just going to be shipping them out of state or sending lower level people down to county jails, or they're going to release the people that will turn right around and go back in. because that's the nature of their crimes.
Right.
Instead of releasing older people and whatever. So I refuse to give up hope.
Well,
but,
boy, he's very, very blessed to have someone as dedicated as you by his side. And
yeah.
I sincerely hope things will work out for the positive.
I do too.
So you brought up a very good point, which is there is so much interest today in UFOs.
Right.
And I know you have just an incredible amount of information and stories about the human ET contact. Would you like to tell us a little more about that? And first of all, when was the very first UFO actually documented?
Publicly or not?
either.
Well, you know, there are, again, there are many ancient legends of things in the sky, and there's numerous places around the world where you can find pictographs and cave drawings that are clearly of astronauts and spaceships. And one of my favorite things to share is in Iran. Yes, it's in Iran. Along a road, and again, without looking at the report, I don't know between the two cities, but along this road, up on this cliff, there is this amazing, like 3D or 2D carving up on the side of the cliff, and it's so high up, you know, humans can't necessarily stand down below and really see it clearly. I really believe that it was carved for something that's going to be like flying in and hovering and looking
mm-hmm.
at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think there's like carvings of maybe four scrolls. So it like says the same text in four different languages, and they're very ancient languages, but there's also some beings in there. And if I remember correctly, one of them might be a winged being, but it's called the Behistun, well, that's all I can remember. Behis, I think TUN, monument, or, you know, it's not a statue, but it's more of a carving. But it is there, but it's, like I said, you know, you can't get to it from above, and there's no, like, path up to it. So you almost have to be at eye level, but eye level is very high off the ground. So it was meant for somebody else to read.
Aren't there quite a few of those in South America, too?
Oh, there very well could be. And there are actually, you know, there's some ancient civilizations there. And Mark's been telling me about different things where we might think maybe they were Aztec or Mayan or whatever. But there's some evidence that there was some raptor and reptilian existence down in South America and Central America. Because there's clearly some drawings of raptors and reptilians down there. But, you know, it's like in the 20s, so to kind of answer your question, I think there's been contact for, you know, hundreds, thousands of years. In the 20s, Tesla was communicating somehow with aliens. In the 30s, right before World War II, Marx, one of his history professors, who wasn't his history professor yet, obviously in the 30s, Mark wasn't even born, but... He was also an OSS agent, and so he went undercover with a German top secret expedition, and the Germans had this organization where they went all over the world looking for secret stuff, and part of it was evidence about UFOs and things like that. Well, they came across, they found a ruined cave facility, underground base facility. There were some reptilian skeletons, and there were some human female skeletons who had been chained up.
Wow.
So there's some evidence there. And then they came across this huge gate in Iran, and there were some like gray drones working there, and there were some raptors there. And he was with the Nazis, so they captured a bunch of them. And so here's this guy who turned out to be later one of Mark's history professors, but back then, you know, he could have been friends with Mark's dad, but, you know, he goes in, and for whatever reason, they're not killed because the raptors want to work with the Nazis. So the raptors back then and reptoids worked with the Nazis during World War II until they got upset with the Nazis and then they stopped helping.
Wow.
Which is a good thing. But, you know, and so they saw a gate there, and they saw this underground base that had the ability, like you could store several, you know, flying saucers in there, and
yeah.
there were probably several in there, but it was amazing. So that was in the 30s. And in the 40s, when Mark's dad was a teenager, his dad was busy with something, and I don't know exactly what, because Mark's still writing this report up, but there was some activity going on in New Mexico and different areas of the Southwest. So it was like the beginning of the Dulce base in New Mexico.
Oh.
And Mark's dad, as a teenager, was sent down there to help with it. And so, you know, even before he was out of high school, he was dealing with alien stuff. And you find, and I think that was the Reptoids, and there were Nazis there. And the Native Americans got involved. Barry Goldwater got involved. Different people who on the side were like actors. They, you know, were in cowboy movies. They were actually doubling as agents for the government. And
wow.
You know, I can't wait to finish reading that. And he still, again, he has to send me these things, you know, in parts, so I don't have all of that. But so that was the 40s. And then after high school, he went into the Army Air Corps and, you know, did World War II, but came out of that. And after World War II, he was doing top secret stuff. And most every place he got stationed, there was some kind of UFO activity.
Interesting. So did he actually see UFO ships inside the hangars at these military bases?
I think Professor Dill, I think there were some flying saucers in that incident in the 30s. I think there were some flying saucers at that base. And then, again, before the war started, Mark's dad, because he's German, the Nazis had wanted to get him to defect and become a Nazi officer. And so he got invited to Germany, and they were showing him cool stuff they were working on, including jets and cool aircraft carriers and cool rockets and probably the flying saucers. And he declined, thankfully, but left with a bunch of secrets.
Wow.
You know, and then turned the secrets over to the government. So, you know, we knew what they were working on.
And they were, like, so far ahead of us, were they not?
They were very much far ahead of us. And then, you know, later, Mark's dad, I mean, he knew the Horton brothers, who were designing incredibly interesting aircraft for the Nazis and stuff. And even in one of my reports from this, 78, Mark's dad's flying one of these Horton aircrafts here in the United States. So it's like, okay. So there have been times where there's been some mutual cooperation after the war.
Yeah, no kidding. So do you think that the Nazis were so far ahead of the U.S. because of their location being close to a Reptoid-oriented underground base? I mean, what do you attribute that to?
Well, I'm not sure. Well, they built a base in Afghanistan.
Again?
They did, Afghanistan people or the government, at least like in the 40s, I guess, were fascist. So they were, you know, supporting the Nazis.
Wow.
And it was so. A lot of the times when we hear about these tunnels and things that our troops came across in Afghanistan, it isn't that the Taliban quickly built these cool tunnels. Like, they were using stuff that was already there.
I'm not sure
why the Reptoids and the Raptors picked the Nazis, but clearly they, you know, for some reason, and well, maybe, you know, I don't know. That's one of those questions I don't know, because I know the Nazis were very interested in the occult and all that. And I don't know if that's what got the aliens interested in them. You know, I don't know why they picked them to share their flying saucer technology as opposed to picking us first.
Yeah, you know, I have heard.
Ask the captain.
I have heard that there were already existing bases that they just kind of moved into and took over, that were, you know, very, very old and ancient. I've read that before. And I've also think it's very interesting that you're saying that the Afghanistan were fascist in the 1940s. Gee, how convenient
yeah,
is
yeah.
that to support the Nazis? you know,
right,
agenda.
Right.
I mean, amazing. Well, so
and
you're up.
Well, pardon me?
I was going to say you're up to the 40s, and
yes.
I'm just really curious what you're going to say about Roswell in the 50s.
Well, I don't. 1947. I don't have a lot of information about Roswell because that's one of those things his dad would not have been allowed to talk about. But he did write, Mark wrote a report about Hamilton Air Force Base in Northern California, which is near where I live, but it's now just housing. But they had a very elite group of fighter pilots who basically helped on-world and off-world with any kind of threat there was. And it kind of, well, Mark has basically said without saying, you know, what they did at Roswell, but they were involved with most any investigation UFO-related after, you know, Roswell and on. So I'm really sure, even though he can't say, that his dad went to Roswell.
Yeah.
I don't know what he did there, but his dad, you know, he's always said that his dad was involved with any investigation, any UFO-related investigation since World War II, and he was involved with Project Blue Book and all the orders that I read of his. You know, he's gone all over the world for the military, and it was all top secret stuff.
That's, you know, Joanne, my father was a fighter pilot, and, you know, top secret clearance, and probably way higher than that. And I know he had several encounters, you know, personal encounters with UFOs, and just obsessed with reading the material. And after he died, I was able to kind of discover and unearth some maps that he held on to. And he was the kind of guy that never hung on to things. You know, my dad like trashed everything. He would just throw it away. And I thought it was very interesting that he kept this particular map, and it has quite a few. I should bring it over and when I see you next and have you look at it. But I'm very positive that it has something to do with some sort of UFO crash. And he was there to investigate it. So my dad. Yeah.
What area of the world it was?
Yes, it was in South America. It was on the west coast of South America. And this is back in the late 50s.
Okay.
Sometime around.
Wow.
So a lot of the hot jock, you know, fighter pilots were very involved knee deep in the UFO crashes and things like that.
Exactly. It's amazing. And I know, like, in the early 50s, there was a huge air battle over, like, the North Sea because the RAF had spotted UFOs. And the fighter pilots from Hamilton Air Force Base went over there and fought in that. And he came back from that. His plane was on fire. And,
it was
very dramatic. So...
And kind of rethinking, like, wow, maybe their technology is far superior to ours.
A lot of it is, but for a long time we were able to convince them or have them convinced that we were far superior or we had a lot more than we did.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I remember 1962, Mark. Mark's family, they were stationed in France, and his dad was at a meeting. Mark was off with he had a babysitter that could drive. You know, she was probably in her 20s. You know, she was a stripper for one on her cover, but she was actually his bodyguard and an agent. And so they're driving along, and she gets blasted with a sonic weapon, and all of a sudden they're, you know, like ambushed by all these MIB guys, and some are human and some are not. And Mark is a 9-year-old. I mean, he was fully capable of shooting his way out of most stuff, but he's having this little gun battle with these MIBs, and then his dad comes, which was cool. But then, you know, there's no time to drop him off at home with mom, so his dad takes him because there's a UFO that's they're trying to anyway, there's a UFO that has landed, you know, near this town or whatever, and they've got to go deal with it. And that was one of the earlier times because Mark hadn't remembered, like, the year before meeting the raptor and stuff, but that was one of the earlier times Mark remembers, you know, seeing a flying saucer and understanding that his dad was involved with so much more than just being a procurement officer. And it was a wild childhood for him.
I was going to say, now, did he have to go through special deprogramming to recover his memory of a lot of these things?
Well, no, a lot of it he just remembered, but the when he was at the conference in England as a kid, you know, he was one of two human children, and the bad pre-New World Order type people said to his dad and the little girl's grandma, well, we can either mind wash them or we can kill them. It's your choice. You know, they're 7 and 8. Because they figured at some point when they grew up, they were going to talk.
Right.
And so they tried, they did a mind washing thing. It was buffered, so it wasn't it was very traumatic, but it was buffered with the help of the fairies and witchcraft, so it wasn't as devastating as it could have been. But it did take Mark several years to get some of those memories back, and I don't know that he got all of them back, but he's remembered a lot of it. But, it wasn't fun.
Yeah, now his parents rubbed elbows with the Queen of England and the Rockefellers, right? Correct?
Queen of England, Rockefellers, his dad was best friends with JFK, his mom was friends with Jackie, they'd go shopping. His mom would go shopping with the Queen of England and her sister, and Mark, the family used to get invited to, like, the Queen's birthday parties and the Easter parties on the lawn or whatever they're called. And
right.
He, as a kid, he had tea with the Queen Mom when she was alive, so, yeah, and later in the military, he worked with Prince Philip, so, and Admiral Mountbatten, and all kinds of really cool people.
Well, you know, it's absolutely amazing he's still alive. I mean, to have those types of connections, and then to know what he knows, and then try to bring it to an exposure, you know, surface
right.
All this information. It is amazing that his life was spared.
Well, and I think part of that is because, and I'll just say this, he doesn't share everything because he still heeds to his U.S. secrecy oath. The stuff that he shares with me is either stuff he was not personally involved with but has, you know, credible, accurate information about it, or he was under orders by an international security agency that his dad ran. So he's not... You know, we're on the fringe. We're always on the fringe, but we're not doing anything illegal. And, like, when I go to England, I'm not allowed to say certain things, or I'm not allowed to name names about who there is involved with stuff, unless
right.
they're dead. But over here I can. But he's very careful about what he brings out and starts writing about, and he's very careful about what I'm allowed to share. And he does check in with a few people to see if it's okay. There's no reasons why that he's alive, because, you know, he still knows an incredible amount of stuff, and he knows where certain things are, you know, so it's just not in their best interest to kill him off.
Well, and there is a responsibility to exposing this data if it's involving a ton of other people that could have their lives threatened. So there's you have to be careful in the way in which you unravel this information.
Right.
I can totally understand that. Now,
and I know there's people who say, well, why doesn't he just, you know, seeing what they've done to him, why doesn't he just tell everything? And again, I'll say he's an honorable officer. He's not going to break any oaths. And the minute he steps over the line, they'll take him out of state prison and throw him in one of the worst federal prisons, and we'll never see him again.
Ooh,
so, you know,
that.
He wants to keep seeing me, and someday he'd like to see his children and his grandchildren.
Yeah, that's so, kind of a normal request,
just a
isn't it?
Thing.
Just a little thing.
Just a little thing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So you had something else that you had brought up that was really fascinating. It was research about the parliament roles of the medieval England, covering 1272 to 1504. And
you did your homework.
I'm, like, sitting here thinking to myself, how did you guys get your hands on that information?
Actually, you know, it's a software program, basically. He told me about it. I paid for it. I got a CD, and it gives you access to all these parliamentary records. It's cool. And I haven't, you know, used it much, and nobody's asked me to really look up anything, but I looked at it when I first got it, but I definitely still have it. And it's, you know, you just stick in the CD and start looking for what you need. But, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Oh,
because everything, you know, especially even like titled people with their land and their land deeds and stuff. You know, if the queen or the royalty gives you a piece of land, you know, it's like deeded by parliament or something like that.
Well, so, I was thinking, can you imagine the, God, the pearls of wisdom you could find within that regarding the illegalities going on today with our freedom?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that would just be amazing.
Yeah. So that would be a hoot to take the time and go back and actually sit and look at it.
Yeah, no kidding. We're all going to have to go up there and do some research.
Well, come on over.
So tell me a little bit about the space program.
Oh, the space program. Well, our civilian Apollo program is obviously real. We've watched rockets take off, but it was also a cover for the military space program that Mark and his dad were involved in. And after World War II, the military approached the Rand Corporation, and they designed a rocket, and it was going out into the moon and space into the moon in the 50s. And then later on, as it was upgraded and stuff, Mark used those kind of rockets to train in and probably do some missions in.
Wow.
Then, like I said, in the 50s, Taylor and Dyson designed this atomic-powered spaceship, which was the size of a aircraft carrier. No, a battleship, not an aircraft carrier.
Oh,
a battleship, and then it had smaller support craft. And there was actually a fleet, and they were upgraded over the years. So by the time, you know, not his first mission, but probably one of his later missions, the one he was using had been upgraded with an antimatter engine and stuff like that. And so but it's funny because he always wants me to tell people that back even in the 70s, they weren't like totally computerized. They were still using slide rules for navigation and certain things. And the computers were only for certain things. And, you know, they were upgraded like from atomic bombs, and they were using chemical things. So, but still, you know, it wasn't like, he's always said, it's not like Star Trek. And, you know, being in anti-gravity is not fun.
It's not fun.
You have boots. No, and in fact, you know, he's dealing with some serious medical issues now because of all the many hours he's been in space. It's wreaked havoc on his circulatory system and his legs, and he's really dealing with some sad things. But
so, Joanne, yeah. was he stationed up in like Mars or the Moon or, you know?
He won't talk about Mars.
Interesting.
So I know he's been. I mean, I know he's been there.
He's been there.
I know, but he can't talk about it. So that must be a U.S. thing. He has mentioned that, you know, other friends might still have bases there. And I know he's been on the moon, except he really won't talk about that either, because he's told me about, you know, being on this mountain on the moon and looking back at Earth, and it's the most beautiful sight he's ever seen. So, okay, so I know he's been on the moon. I know he's been through wormholes. I know he's been out as far as, like, Saturn and Jupiter. And he's been, like, way far out there. And that's in spacecraft. As a kid, I know he's done astral traveling out there too, but that's a whole other topic. But anyway, it's like, you know, at least I know up until the time of his arrest, we had this cool space fleet, and for different missions, he was captain of one of those ships. His dad was the general of the whole fleet, and I just hope that, you know, part of that fleet is still operational, just because he's out of the picture at the moment.
Right.
You know, hopefully somebody's running it, because I'm sure that it's needed.
Well, has he ever described what his experience was like going through the wormhole?
Yes, and I have a lovely quote about that. But the main thing that I remember is something about it's like steel wool. Did he say ants? I remember the steel wool part. But so it was pretty amazing. But I remember it was like feeling like something about steel wool.
Oh, God.
And he ended up, and I don't know, he ended up like on another planet. At least this one time. You know, he goes, well, I ended up on this other planet. I had to get this weapon and then go back and help my dad. But, Yeah, I don't know how many times he's been through wormholes. I know he's done that. I know he's done some dimensional shifting. He knows a whole lot about time travel, but he doesn't really talk about it.
God, it's almost like they've put him on ice, you know?
I mean, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, because he has so much knowledge. I know there's quite a few that have come forward who literally traveled to Mars and back on
right.
a fairly regular basis, and they say that
right.
they get into this elevator, and the next thing they know, the door opens, and they're literally walking onto Mars.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know how that works, and he won't talk about it.
Interesting.
So that probably means he knows about it.
So what is his thought about all this controversy about a lot of the you know, missions to the moon are false and they're all fake and that kind of thing?
Absolutely not. He has said a couple of times, and we've used it in a couple of reports, but I have some wonderful quotes that he's written in. You know, he and his dad are personal witnesses to the Apollo program. And he has been in a helicopter protecting the little capsule as it's splashed down.
Yeah.
He's been up in space protecting Apollo 17, which he's just writing about. And he's been on the moon. And he's known about our base up there that we used to have. So he said, absolutely, you know, we did go to the moon. The Apollo missions were a cover for other things, but we did go to the moon. And yes, maybe some photographs were faked, but it was more like a time delay thing. And also because you couldn't really see what the astronauts were seeing because there were aliens sitting around when we were landing on the moon.
Right, right.
You know, I have a photo. And I do share this in one of my PowerPoints. I have a photo. His dad had the wonderful capacity to get feed from, we'll just say, other friends. they liked to be present when we were landing on the moon, and they liked to get in the picture. So
how
I have this
funny.
This old black and white photo. It's clearly an astronaut walking in, you know, in the background. I mean, you can see that's, you know, it's the typical astronaut looking thing.
Right.
But right in front of the lens is this almost like a ghosty, you know, woo image. So it's not like a corporeal form, you know, it's not a head, arms and legs, but it's clearly reminds me of something when I'm seeing a ghost.
Interesting.
And it is clearly not human, and it's definitely alien, and it's right there, and it's a real photo. And you know, Mark, I found this in the old family photos. Oh, yeah. I go, well, can I share it? Okay.
Amazing. You must have so much fun going through this stuff.
I do. And sometimes it's like, well, why do I have this? And why do we have this?
I mean, you may not have a husband, but at least you have all the information to sift through and be fully informed
yeah.
and well-versed and entertained.
Yeah, I mean, and if you came here, I mean, I have all these souvenirs that people from other countries have given them because, like, his dad has been dealing with, like, Saudi Arabian people and people in India and Afghanistan. And in the late 50s, his dad was deployed for 18 months, and on paper, he was stationed in Peshawar, Pakistan. But 12 months of that, he was off planet.
God, how cool
is that?
But I
have pictures of him being in Pakistan, at least so I can prove he was there, and I've got pictures of him being in India, so, you know, I know he was there, but he wasn't there all the time.
Oh, that's amazing.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah. The family is truly amazing. Yeah.
Well,
and his dad's spirit shows up several times, either when I'm speaking or when I go over to the Hornet aircraft carrier, because they had some military work that they did on that ship, and you know, his spirit's very strong. He always hangs out with me on the flight deck. So
very cool. Well,
pretty
so
amazing.
We're about to tie this up, but before we do, what's one little piece of news or information that you think you could share with our audience that just would make them reel? And some little something about what you know. Not that you haven't already shared all that.
Just a couple quick things, and I'll say my website is edhca.org for Earth Defense Headquarters, California. The thing is, don't ever stop questioning and have an open mind. And I would love to see the day where we can work side by side with some of these alien species, because some of them are very friendly,
right on,
and are very interested in what we're doing and would probably be very delightful to work with. So, and then, you know, come hear me speak in Milpitas, Northern California, the weekend of September 21st and 22nd at the UFO Con.
Because that's like the most happening city on the planet, isn't it?
Well, it used to be in Santa Clara. They've just moved it to Milpitas. But, you know, it's nearby. It's not far from Great America, San Jose, all that stuff. But,
I'm just
it's
kidding.
A good conference. I know.
Oh, gosh. Well, Joanne, it's great to reconnect with you, and your information
too
has just been so interesting. We'll have to have you back on and talk a little more about some of these very bizarre kind of alien species. And you do bring a good point, which is, in order for us to attain our galactic position in the universe or even in the solar system, we have to learn to begin cooperating and working alongside other completely different species and get over, you know, form and what we consider to be ugly or uncomfortable.
Just think of the MIB movies and that, like, United Nations place where, you know, all these different species are walking around.
Yeah.
Those kind of places exist.
Yes, they do.
So,
and that's why you had the proliferation of Star Wars and,
yeah,
and all of these other movies, just to kind of start prepping us for this event to come into.
And Mark said the scariest looking ones are usually the friendliest.
Isn't that interesting?
So,
well, you know, I did hear the praying mantis are just incredibly loving, profoundly beautiful beings. That's what
I
told.
He liked them.
Yeah. he liked them. God, it's just too much. It's
was
like, you know, it's a coffee table
conversation.
He was
a female when he met her when he was about 8.
Oh, my God. Well, you know what? We'll have you on again, and I'm sure this will be very interesting to a lot of people. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me.
And we will talk soon. Everybody, do not forget to visit her website, which is edhca.org, and that stands for the EDH Research Center, and I think you'll be very interested in all the information that she has. So thanks again, Joanne. We will talk to you soon. I wish you all the best. And take care, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh.